What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I got to tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate, so don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes, and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions, and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
We're digging deep and asking the questions we need to ask.
Years of stress, and not just emotional. I was depleting my body. I was malnourished.
I'm working out like crazy. I'm eating all these healthy foods. How could I not be well?
We have to get back to the basics.
We can change the way our genes are expressed.
Anyone that wants to improve their health or upgrade their health, they should be biohacking. My name is Renee.
And I'm Lauren. We are the Biohacker Babes. We're sisters, and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
The Biohacker Babes podcast aims to create insight into the body's natural healing abilities, strengthen your intuition, and empower you with techniques and modalities to optimize your health and wellness. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Biohacker Babes. I'm Renee, and I'm here with my sister, Lauren.
Hey, guys.
Today, we have a friend and guest on the show, Melissa. So Melissa and I actually met in Vegas 1 year ago. We met through a mutual friend who's also a nutrition practitioner here in Vegas, and we met at a book signing for Diane Sanfilippo's Keto Cookbook. So how appropriate that that's where we met. And so she's another Vegas local, and she has a great experience that we're going to share with you all today. I'm not going to give away the details quite yet. So a quick background on Melissa. She is a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, a biohacker, and a passionate wellness educator and devoted mother. Melissa grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, and currently lives with her fiance and their 4-year-old son in Las Vegas, Nevada. In 2017, Melissa was diagnosed with PTSD and depression. She was treated with a common SSRI. With a background in ancestral nutrition, Melissa knew that she wanted to take a more holistic and alternative approach to her mental health. With the support of her family, she worked with her doctor and dedicated the following 2 years of her life doing just that. Melissa has had an incredible journey and experimented with biohacking. I mean, I instantly connected with her because I was like, oh, she's definitely a biohacker. This is awesome. So we can't wait to dive in and learn more. So welcome, Melissa.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is super exciting. Super cool.
Awesome. We're so happy to have you.
Yeah, I'm definitely honored to be here. So cool. Let's jump in.
I kind of like have built it up as to what we're going to be talking about. Do you want to maybe like in one sentence kind of reveal that for everyone?
Sure. I definitely want to speak to my experience with microdosing psilocybin and weaning myself off of my SSRI, or better known as antidepressant, for my mental health, and in conjunction with my nutritional approach to wellness, which was, you know, the ketogenic lifestyle for me. So yeah, going into that, basically with a little bit of background as far as where I got, how I got here. It really did start about 9 years ago when I met my fiance. I was living a pretty fast, crazy lifestyle, just drinking, partying. I think I smoked like a pack a day. I was wild and insane. But I knew that immediately after meeting him, I was going to just clean up my act. So that was step one. That led me down a very long journey of figuring out what is healthy. I very quickly got sucked into the propaganda of becoming a vegan. That was done and done. I became an ethical, nutritional vegan. I couldn't stop talking about it, boasting about it. And about, I would say, a year after becoming a vegan, I got sick. I started having nutritional deficiencies. I believe I had a vitamin K2 deficiency. I lost 2 teeth and had to get implants. Yeah. So I had a nutritional decline quickly. I moved on quickly to a bodybuilder diet, actually. So another just low fat, high caloric intake. I was doing insanity before that. So then I started, you know, obviously introducing the meat back in. So I think for, I don't know, a year and a half, I ate chicken, brown rice, and vegetables. You know, the same old, same old.
Yeah.
I did feel better for a while, just like I did when I started the vegan diet, because I cut drinking and I cut smoking and I did all of that very quickly. So yeah, that's where my health kind of journey began. And then I went from basically vegan to bodybuilder to adding a little bit of carbs to then going paleo, which I did really well at. Unfortunately, with paleo, I was just found myself in a place where I was eating too high carbs, too much sugar. So now we're talking about serious blood sugar imbalances, problems with mood stabilization, all kinds of issues that I was seeing. I had my son. I got pregnant with my son. I gained an exorbitant amount of weight with him because when I got pregnant with him, I was so lean from bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. I was so lean that I'm surprised I was able to get pregnant. My hormones were insane. So I gained a lot of weight. And then shortly after having him, I experienced postpartum anxiety. And with my background in mental health, I've always experienced anxiety. At 24, I was diagnosed with panic disorder. So there were times where I was breathing in a bag, lots of panic attacks, daily panic attacks, ending myself in the hospital. So it wasn't a stranger to me. However, postpartum anxiety was definitely different. This was almost daily crippling fear that something terrible was going to happen to my child. So very, very scary. I saw a therapist once and was like, this isn't really doing anything. Like I immediately just felt like this is wrong. This is the wrong path for me. I did get better, I should say. My symptoms decreased for a little while. Then suddenly, it feels like suddenly, I had basically a psychotic break. just one day I was very depressed, very, very depressed, suicidal thoughts, which I'd never had in my entire life. I'm generally a really happy person. I love life. I love my family. I have great friends. But I fell into a deep depression very quickly, and I had PTSD symptoms. So a very brief history on just the trauma that led me to PTSD. I had experienced sexual abuse as a child. And for my entire adult life, I always knew that, those things happened, but never remembered them. So I suppose suppressed memories. And some of those memories started coming in as flashes, almost like you would see in a movie, but it would be more like flashes of a t-shirt or flashes of what was playing on TV, but not the actual acts of anything itself. So just very terrifying for me, not knowing what was going on. And at the time, I had a very young son, and that this is a really scary space to be in when you're thinking about possibly hurting yourself. Because my mind goes immediately to, well, is this what happens when people hurt their child? Like, what, who knows? When you're in this space of psychotic break, PTSD, you hear people doing terrible things. So I did reach out to three people. I reached out and got, you know, just some accountability. Like, please hold me accountable to go see a doctor. I did within a week and immediately was put on an SSRI. Now, my fiance and I, we discussed it. I knew right then that this is just not what I wanted to do. I had been on one, you know, when I got diagnosed a long time ago for panic attacks, and I did not like the feeling. It was very numbing. I didn't feel much of anything. I was going through life feeling nothing. So I knew right away this is not what I was going to do. I was very passionate about nutrition. I've been on this journey at this point for, I don't know, six, seven years looking for what was healthy, and I felt like, okay, I made a deal with him. If I could figure out how to get myself healthy, we would talk about weaning off. So that's what I did. I basically threw every therapy that I could at myself, including nutritional therapy, everything that I knew about nutrition, and learned as much as I could. So I was knee deep all the time trying to figure out what that path was for me. I decided to take myself into therapeutic ketosis for a year. I quit drinking. Not that I drank a lot, but I just quit all alcohol. At the time, I was, I don't know, miraculously, I found the holistic psychologist. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but I found her on Instagram. At the time, I think she only had about 20,000 followers. And there was just something about her that really spoke to me. She, the way she handled treatment or healing, you know, she really was teaching people how to self-heal. I drafted an email to her, like, please take me on it as a client. Within a couple of days, she posted something that she had an opening. So I'd already had that in my draft, and I sent it to her, and within minutes she responded, and just all of a sudden I was a client of hers, and I was really, really excited to be on that path with her. And this was different. This therapy was different because she was teaching me the tools to help myself. Meanwhile, I'm doing other things like breath work, meditation, float therapy, talk therapy, cold exposure, red light therapy, infrared sauna. I make sure I'm getting enough water. I'm making sure that my serotonin levels are being, you know, are where they need to be with my diet. I'm taking probiotics, doing everything that every podcast is telling me to do, right? I'm just knee deep in this. I'm biohacking. I'm going to get blood work done. I'm just throwing myself full deep in this, like, okay, holistic world, what do you have for me? And I would say about 6, 7 months into this, I did start feeling better, like probably immediately started feeling better, because once you get what, sunshine and some basic nutritional deficiencies met, you're gonna feel better. So I did immediately start feeling better. And then that, you know, that progressed for me, my healing progressed. At some point during this, I really kind of got into a little bit of research in microdosing. And I knew, okay, I'm going to do this. Just, it was a gut innate thing. This is happening. I did enough research on it to know that I was being safe, that I wasn't going to hurt myself, and that I sourced the mushrooms, you know, from a reliable place. It, you know, that's the biggest thing, is you're not taking some random thing. I did enough research to put me there. but I didn't want to get too involved in researching and affecting the placebo effect even more, right? Like I didn't want to buy into or drink the Kool-Aid, right? Everyone talks so great about it. I didn't put myself in this Tim Ferriss bubble, Joe Rogan of microdosing is the cure-all. I wanted to just have my own experience. And so that's what I did. And
I've had such an incredible journey, like all your biohacking. I mean, just from, if you think back to just like going to a vegan diet, I mean, how much you've been through and changed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's actually the hardest. I think that is actually the hardest thing for people. But for me, it's super easy. Once I get my mindset on something, it's just, this is what I'm going to do. Nothing's going to get in my way. And I hope you're along for the ride. Cause like, I'm just going to do it. Right. Like when I was bodybuilding, it was okay. I want to do a show and I'm going to figure out how to do it. And if that means waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day, that's what I'm going to do. And this is, I'm all in, right? I'm all in. The problem with that is I was never, there was no checks and balances. I was never questioning what I was doing. You know, I decided to go and get my physical trainer license because I wanted to learn more about what I was doing to my body. But I wasn't questioning like, hey, is throwing this weight around doing this, is just eating chicken all day, every day hurting me? So that's been, I mean, I guess one of the biggest things I've learned along the way is just question everything.
Yeah.
To an extent, right? Like we have to always be trying to prove ourselves wrong.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like, if you're not, then you're, I don't know, you're buying into a belief system and it becomes an ideology. You're doing something different. And that's, I just never want to be in that space again. So yeah.
Yeah. We talk about that on the show a lot, just using discernment and being able to use your own research and experiment yourself, because you have to find the answers within yourself. So
right. And like everything I'm talking here is just anecdotal. For me in my practice, my friends, my family, I just ask people to go research themselves. You know, a lot of people come to me for advice and questions and I'm happy to give, but I'm also just like, you don't trust me. Don't trust anything I say. Go look it up. I mean, hear any statistics I give here, I'll give you, you know, in the show notes, you can put, you know, the studies that I reference. But for me, it's don't trust me. I did that. You know, I had a very trusted friend come over who I love dearly and still do, admired. And he showed me a movie. He showed me a movie, a very emotional Forks Over Knives. And that was it. I was all in. It didn't matter. I was like, this is it. I drank that Kool-Aid.
So oh, yeah. Movies are very convincing. That is okay, because you formed your own opinion. You didn't take that from someone else. I mean, that's so powerful. Giving someone an article, giving them a YouTube video to watch.
Created a very critical mindset for me. You know, as much as I believe in the experience of microdosing psychedelics, I'm still like, okay, so what's the dark side, right? Like if there's a good side, there's always a dark side. I don't know, I've seen that movie. So there are risks involved. And as much as I know personally, I want to just look at the good things. I just want to hear about what's the positive I can get from this, right? But it's important that we look at the risks, because there is no free lunch. Is that what the quote is? There's no free lunch. Everything that we do has a counter effect. And the best thing that we can do really is find out what that is and supplement accordingly.
Yeah. So, well, we should talk about that. I mean, we definitely want to talk about, you know, the debate, what's the downside. But before we do that, I would love to hear more about the upside. I mean, you obviously experienced some great things. And leading up to this podcast, I did a lot of research. I mean, there's definitely good research about, like, you know, PTSD, anxiety.
Yeah, there's some
OCD, which obsessive compulsive disorder, which kind of like shot out at me because I've had OCD my whole life, you know.
Same. And the one thing really great to point out about that is just all of these, depression, anxiety, OCD, all of these diagnoses that the DSM has created, they're all subjective to your doctor. They're all within very slight variations of each other. So it's important that we just kind of always keep that in perspective. I really like to talk a lot about just not becoming your diagnosis, not, you know, identifying with, I have depression or I have anxiety, so now I'm an anxious person, and using that as kind of a crutch almost, because, well, I have
it's this. Crippling.
It is. And I think that society has done such a great job of destigmatizing, I think, mental illness, mm-hmm. but almost to our own detriment. Because now it's kind of become this, it's not your fault.
You have anxiety and everyone has anxiety. It's just normal for everyone to have anxiety.
Yeah. It's not your fault has turned into you have no control.
Right. And it's not empowering.
Right. That's not the case. We do have control. And the space that I'm in right now is really just learning how much control we do have over our mental illness. So, sorry, I don't know if I answered your question. I kind of can go off on a tangent.
Yeah. No, yeah. I just want to say one more thing about that. Like, you're right. You're both right about that. Like, people are posting, I think, almost oversharing on social media because it's so normal now.
Yeah. Like, it's celebrated, right? You come out and say, I came out and I said I had PTSD and from sexual abuse. And I was definitely called self-serving to my face by a friend, which was, really upsetting, but also, you know, it's true. So a part of that,
yeah, like a wake up call.
Yeah, it's a part of that is true. It's like, listen, we have to be mindful of what's happening and take some kind of responsibility for our own health, right? We have to take that responsibility and say, okay, what is going on in my body? Maybe that's causing me to have depression. Do I have inflammation? Do I have chronic inflammation? Am I taking a probiotic? Am I eating healthy foods? I mean, there's randomized controlled trials right now with gluten to show that gluten's causing depression. So I think there are a lot of questions that we do need to be asking ourselves. It's not your fault, but do you have control? And I think that's a space that needs more highlighting. And it's a delicate space, right? Because I probably just pissed off of people by saying that. And it's not to say I've dealt with these things. My mom is bipolar. I've dealt with mental illness my whole life. It's just, it's time that we change the conversation a little bit because people aren't getting better. There's more people drugged now than ever before and nobody's getting better. People are not getting better from taking SSRIs. It's not. In fact, you know, the reverse can be said. People are getting worse and they can be dangerous. I think prescription drugs are like the third leading cause of death behind disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no one wants to talk about that.
No, and nobody wants to talk about how there's no testing. You go into a doctor and I think 75% of SSRIs, antidepressants, are actually prescribed by a primary physician, not even a psychiatrist, and over a 10-minute discussion.
Yeah, they're so easy to acquire. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And nobody's testing your liver enzymes to see if you can even metabolize that. And that's dangerous because there are people who have committed homicide. And those cases are of their family members, their children. There's a man that strangled his son to death after 2 weeks of an SSRI. And they were able to prove that he was intoxicated from his SSRI and was let free from that. And what a obviously tragic story. But it just goes to show something like microdosing is so vilified, right? Like it's so crazy to take a mushroom, but to take a drug that has biochemical effect on you that you have no idea. It's just Russian roulette, right? You have no idea. Is it going to work? There's no testing. Nobody tested you for depression. Nobody tested your body to see, you know, what's going to happen to you biochemically. Nothing. So it's a really scary space. I think that SSRIs, the benefit of them is really amplified and the risks are just suppressed and kind of the other way around with mushrooms. So anyways, microdosing.
I just want to jump in. Like, I think that really, again, speaks to the personalization of health. Like we need to personalize. And I wonder if down the road, there's going to be more information and testing about using psychedelics, like making sure they...
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure
work with your biology. I mean,
totally.
Yeah, there are risks. I think that's real. Like in the 1960s, when like they started to get a bad reputation, like that wasn't for no good reason. I think there's a crazy amount of benefits from it, but we do have to like look at the individual always. Yeah. I think there's going to be more and more information about that.
Yeah. And in the 60s, it's important to point out that a lot of people were just, you know, they were taking crazy amounts of drugs and partying And what I'm talking about when I talk about microdosing, or when people are talking about taking full doses of psychedelics in a therapeutic setting, this is done with intention. This is very different than I'm going to go take a party drug and go to Burning Man, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you want to do, you know, right on, that's your thing. But what I'm talking about is a real intention setting.
I just want to jump in really quick because my parents will listen to this. I go to Burning Man. I have engaged in that. And there are some people that do it as a party drug there, and there are a shit ton of people that do it there with intention. So again, it's just like so individualized.
Absolutely.
It's accessible to anyone. So it's then like empowering you to make the choice. Like you have the power to choose what you're going to use it for. And hopefully that's being used for good.
And you know, if you're taking it to party, you probably had a really good time. And there's no judgment for me. I just, as a mother of a toddler with grandparents listening, and it's important for me in my life to explain exactly what I'm doing to educate, right? Like I'm not partying when I take a microdose. The act of taking a microdose is a sub-perceptual dose of a drug. So you're not feeling the effects of this drug, right? Like I'm not tripping and driving my kid to school.
I don't know if I could go to a party on a microdose. Like I wrote my eBooks microdosing. Like you're not in that place at all.
You're not feeling anything. Now, like the very first time I microdosed, I was at Zion, and we took a hike into a waterfall, and I definitely felt it. And she told me, my girl who doses me out for the month, she told me the first time you're probably going to feel something. And I did. I almost felt like I wanted to throw up a little bit, and that was it. But then I felt great, right? And
which is common with mushrooms, the nauseous.
Yeah. And that was actually the only time I'd ever felt that. And even when there was one time where I accidentally took one without eating much breakfast, I was in a rush and I just took like a half a banana. And that day, I would say I had a very low level. I could feel what was going on. I mean, I had a fantastic day. I won't lie. But I did feel it that day. In normal days, I don't feel it. And I think that's what that in that area is where people get confused. People are like, whoa, you're taking, you know, you're microdosing mushrooms. What does that mean? And they're not understanding that that dose is so small. It's like 0.5. And then I think a therapeutic dose is more in the range of 5. So like we're talking very big difference.
Yeah. Like we take vitamins and supplements that are probably having more of an effect in that way that we don't even realize.
Yeah. When you're getting into the nootropic space, I mean, you're altering, you know, you're altering your body. This is what's happening. This is, you're altering your brain.
They're almost in the same class, right? Like Paul Stamets says it should be considered a nootropic, but nootropics are on shelves. Like they're being sold and marketed already. And
I hope
psychedelics are so far behind.
I hope mushrooms get there. I actually have used his stack for microdosing. I don't know if you've tried this, but the niacin and lion's mane. So I didn't care for the niacin, but I do stack mine with lion's mane, which I think is really helpful.
I know Ben Greenfield is big on that combination, but I'm with you. The niacin flush, I'm always like, whoo.
Not hello. Me. I think I get enough in my diet that I don't really need to. And maybe that's why, I'm not sure. I just did it a couple of times and was like, yeah, not for me. Not happy today. But I guess I could speak a little bit to my experience with it. So gosh, if I met you a year ago.
Melissa, can I do like a timeout for like psychedelics 101? I'm really not sure where our listeners are in this space, like what they know. Psilocybin, mushrooms, psychedelics, are these all the same?
There's different classes of psychedelics, right? There's LSD, there's different things. We're talking specifically about mushrooms. So that is psilocybin. That is the active compound in mushrooms. Now, that's the only thing I've done. So that's my experience with it. I've not ever taken any other psychedelics. No, I have taken MDMA, but I don't think that's considered in the same class here.
Although I think it is actually, they are considering it. Yeah. I think it's in the same class of drugs, but okay. I think it's the three. Well, actually there's four: LSD.
MDMA, ketamine.
The list continues.
Right. Okay. Well,
but LSD and psilocybin are the top two for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I've not done LSD in a manner of microdosing. So I have experienced that when I was very young and it was awful. Anyway, psilocybin, your gut actually transforms that compound to psilocin. And this compound actually works with the serotonin system of the brain. We know serotonin is an important brain chemical, right? That modulates a range of different psychological functions, mood especially, but also cognitive and states of consciousness. So I believe that the compound is specifically working on stimulating the, I believe it's called serotonin 2A receptor. And that is involved with like adaptability, flexibility, plasticity. So in this area is where it gets a little bit, I mean, it's a little bit sciencey, right? And I had to kind of like write down some notes to remember, but basically it's shutting down the default mode network in the brain, which you can also basically say is shutting off your ego. So what you find in microdosing is you are, or full dosing is where you see like probably pretty substantial benefits right away, which I was just a little bit too chicken to do. So I went my microdosing route. You're going to see much more, you know, dramatic effects in that. Like you know, you hear of people losing their ego in a single dose and that lasting, believe like sometimes a lifetime, right? A lot of people refer to studies that have been done where they show effects for 6 to 8 months afterwards, the same as if they just took the dose. With microdosing, you're going to see like all the same effects. It's just over a period of time. So
it's dramatic.
Right. I've been microdosing for, I really think, a year and a half. But like I said before, with my experience specifically, I was doing all of these other therapies, right? Like there's so many things I was throwing at the fence. It was really hard to find. There's so many variables. It's really hard to find out what was working, what wasn't. So I did periods of getting off dosing and then going back on and trying to, you know, create my own scientific study with myself. Keeping a journal and deciding like what days I felt good and what, you know, what was the psilocybin and what was me.
Were you able to quantify it, or was it just the journaling and more like physiological symptoms?
How do I answer that? I can answer it by saying I believe that microdosing significantly changed my outlook and perception of life. I think on days that I dosed, right, like I wasn't singing. There's no kaleidoscope. I wasn't singing naked from trees. But I noticed like beauty in the world, where for a while I didn't, you know, I wasn't able to stop and smell the roses, so to speak. And it's not like the roses are glowing and, you know, you're like, wow, look at all these amazing colors. It's just like, wow, that's really beautiful that rose is able to grow there. And that's not something that I would typically stop and notice because I'm busy, right? I've got 5 messages on Instagram. I'm worried about my kid. I'm doing this and that. I'm not worried about this stuff. And it sounds so simplistic, but truly it's not. When you're microdosing, you're not doing it every day. You're doing it every fourth day. I know that there's some people that do it differently, and I did it every fourth day. So the first day you feel the effects, the second day you feel half the effects, the third day it's flushed from your system. So then you would microdose the fourth day again. Mm-hmm. And I found myself really looking forward to the fourth day, right? That fourth day, I knew I was going to just love life. I was just going to listen to more music. I felt like I got into flow a lot easier. Life just seemed to be pretty magical. In conjunction with microdosing, I will say that I did develop a practice that my therapist, shout out the holistic psychologist, had me do. It's a practice of future self journaling. So it's just, you know, sitting down with a journal every day and writing as if you are your future self. So who you want to be in the world. So I am proud. I am confident. I am not nervous to talk in this podcast. I am thinking with intention and, you know, knowledge and writing that down every day in conjunction with microdosing. You are creating, I mean, our science is showing us that we are creating new neural pathways in the brain. That's what the drug is doing. So you are changing your brain. You are changing your outlook, your perception of life. I also kept a gratitude journal, which we know the work there, what that actually does for the brain. So I did all of those things, and I did kind of, this isn't toxic positivity, right? This is just literally changing the way I perceive and interact with the world, because I now have a more positive outlook. I feel more gratitude, and I notice the beauty in the world. Things I don't think I could have ever done on an SSRI. Because with that, what's it doing? It's depleting my serotonin. It's not acting as serotonin, because I don't know if I mentioned, but the psilocybin is turned into psilocin in the gut, right? That compound is almost exact chemical makeup of serotonin. Mm-hmm. So without depleting your own serotonin, you are just basically getting a boost of serotonin. Now with an SSRI, you're talking about depleting your serotonin, your dopamine, as well as developing other nutritional deficiencies, which range from, you know, antidepressant to antidepressant. So you're not getting any of that. So also
makes you need more and more over time.
Right. Yeah. Over time, and can cause serious psychological effects. And you may need to take them for the rest of your life after that. And I'm not, you know, it's important for me to just say that I'm not saying anybody should just get off their SSRI. You know, I had permission from my doctor and support of my family to do that. And it was done carefully. Although I was not on a high dose, and I was not on for very long. So especially being an FNTP, I have to be careful not to tell everybody, you know, go out and microdose. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just sharing my personal experience. And I hope that people, you know, change their outlook on mental health and just being an advocate for your own health, right? That's what biohacking is. That's what this
exactly is.
Where you have to advocate, no, because nobody cares. Your doctor, as well-intended as he may be, he doesn't care. He doesn't want to know where your rash came from. He wants to give you something to make it go away. So if you're not looking for your root cause, who is? I mean, I am, if you hire me as an FNTP, who's really looking? You know, you have to advocate for yourself. Probably on a tangent, but.
No, and I think that's super important. Anytime we talk about medications, if you want to get off of them, you have to work with your doctor. Like, this is a serious thing to get off a medication.
And the thing, you know, one of the things to point out about antidepressants is you get off and they'll warn you, you know, you're going to get off and you're going to go back to this previous mental state. And what the studies actually show us is that you're actually experiencing a withdrawal. You're experiencing withdrawal from the drug. You're not experiencing any, you know, oh, I was broken. I had a chemical imbalance and this drug, this wonder drug saved my life. No, that's not what you're experiencing. It's not a return to your previous broken self. It's a withdrawal. It's a serious withdrawal from a very serious drug. And the more, you know, the variations in the drugs change your side effects. We spoke earlier about going into your doctor and having a very brief conversation about what drug, based off some symptoms that you're having. I went in and specifically asked for Lexapro because I have a girlfriend who is a pharmacist, and I asked her what's the least, you know, side effect drug that I can easily wean off of that has the most benefits, whatever. And so I went in and specifically asked for it. There wasn't much of an exchange of anything. I was written a script and I left. And that in itself should terrify people. I believe the statistic is, I think over 50% of people who are prescribed any drug have done so because they saw it on a TV commercial.
Which is a whole nother thing. You know, the US and Australia, or New Zealand, I believe, are the only continent that can even have drug commercials on TV.
Right. It's terrifying. I mean,
yeah.
And they just whisk over those risks, don't they?
That's what I don't get, because those risks at the end really get me. I'm terrified. Like, it gives me anxiety hearing that. I'm like, I could never, I do not understand what goes through people's brains that makes them go, oh, that doesn't matter. Or I won't get that.
The risks are so small, right? Yeah.
Oh gosh. It's like death, depression, cancer.
I actually start laughing. I start laughing when I hear a commercial. I'm like, that's
so ridiculous.
I know, but other people see it and they say, oh, but look, that girl, that woman is frolicking.
She's so happy.
Hours.
Yeah.
And you see that she's now fat, depressed, and can't have sex because she's got no sex drive. They don't see, they're not looking. That's the visual that they show you. Is
the power of advertising.
Yeah, this is actually going to happen to you. You're going to be happy. You're not going to be happy. You're going to be numbed, and you're not going to have any sex drive, and you're going to gain weight. Mm-hmm. And your health is going to decline. You're probably going to have inflammation. You're going to have a range of nutritional deficiencies that your health is going to start declining. And good luck. And at some point, we're going to probably have to put you on another drug. And then so goes the domino effect.
Right, drug after drug. Yeah, I have to say, I'm really lucky. When I was, I think, like 12 years old, my parents took me to, I don't remember if it was a psychiatrist, something like that, because I had an eating disorder. And within 5 minutes, they'd written me a script for an antidepressant. This is what she needs.
Yeah. Bye.
Fortunately, my parents knew at the time, like, no, that's not an option. So I never went down that path. But within 5 minutes, that was the answer.
And this happens so much in even with nutritional therapy. So in nutritional therapy, I specifically, my space is really just mental health. I really want to help people find what their deficiencies are and work with them there, meet them where they are, and they can work with their doctor along with me to help them get off their SSRIs if that's what, you know, we can do with their doctor. But I mean,
do you test like nutrients, neurotransmitters, like what kind of testing do you do for that?
I don't actually, I don't have that credential yet to actually do any blood work and test neurotransmitters, but I do, like, I don't know if you've heard of like Chapman reflexes. So I'm in there feeling like palpation points to feel for inflammation.
Oh, okay.
Congestion.
Yeah.
And alongside a very long questionnaire, I can really pinpoint what's going on, the area of digestion that there's dysfunction, the blood sugar imbalances, and then we support the body there. So very typical is somebody's going to have a poor digestion and they're going to go to the doctor and the doctor's going to write them a script for something which will deplete their B12. And we know that B12 is linked to depression. We know that it causes not just serious depression, but like psychotic depression. People hearing sounds, seeing people, right? From B12.
Yeah, yeah. Now linked to dementia and Alzheimer's, which is why like proton pump inhibitors, right? Like you said, deplete B12. That's where the link is coming into dementia.
Then they're treating those people with antidepressants. when all along, honestly, they probably, something as simple as didn't have enough stomach acid to break down their food.
Right.
So their small intestine's inflamed, then their large intestine. So now they have all these digestion problems when really if I could have just given them some HCL. And
would have been much easier.
Right. Just something simple, a dietary change or a lifestyle change, right? Because even with depression is the one that, you know, I talk about a lot, but even with anxiety, I think that depression, anxiety, all mental illness, we really need to ask ourselves why. What's going on? What's my body telling me? My body's saying something. Our bodies are so wise, right? They're communicating to us all the time. It's telling you, it's screaming at you. You don't have a rash for no reason. There's a reason you have a rash. The question should be why, not how can I cover it up? A very common one is like the bumps on the back of the arms. You know, I've had friends tell me, oh, I have it, but it's cosmetic. So I just put something, you know, a cream. And I'm all better. And it's like, oh my gosh, your body is screaming at you that there's something wrong.
Yeah. And you just shut it down.
Yeah. You just shut that down. And that's, I think, for whatever reason, that's the mindset that we have is, you know, there's a pill out there, or there's a cream and it's going to go away. And I was just born this way. And there's not a lot of value in our innate wisdom and our body's innate wisdom. And I think that's kind of where, I never want to say I'm a lifestyle coach because I just feel like it sounds so woo and silly, but that's kind of where the other side of nutritional therapy comes in is really, I really try to focus with people on trusting themselves and advocating for their own health and listening to their body, listening to what it's telling them. How do you mm-hmm. feel, right? Like, how do you feel doing what you're doing? Does it make you feel good? How do you feel mentally? Check in with yourself, meditate. I think meditation has been one of the most profound practices that I've ever introduced in my life. And I think that once we get to a point where we're asking ourselves why and looking at our body as this beautiful organism that it is and trusting it, I think we can get away from pharmaceutical drugs. For the most part, most people, I believe, can get away from pharmaceutical drugs if they want to. But the mindset has to be there. The work has to be there. You got to get away from this mindset of, I'm going to take a pill and it's all going to go away. Mm-hmm. I mean, microdosing is taking something, right? But if it's done with intention, it's work.
Yeah.
It's work. I mean, it's not, there's no biological free lunch. I'm not taking a pill and going to have a glorious life. That's not what I've done. I've done it with intention and it was work and it was hard. You know, it's hard to do that work because when you're meditating, it's not pleasant. When you're journaling, it's not all of this stuff isn't pleasant every day. And it's not like you're always skipping through a field of flowers. You know, a lot of this is hard work.
But you're moving forward always.
Yeah. And growing.
A pill takes you backwards. You've created such a responsible and beautiful practice. I think that's really powerful and empowering to other people. I'm so happy for you to spread this story.
Yeah. So in the middle of all this, I decided to, you know, go ahead and get some credentials. So that's why I went ahead and got with the NTA. I'd had a girlfriend who was a nutritional therapy practitioner. She actually works alongside or used to with Diane Sanfilippo. So the little connections that we make in the nutrition world are just funny to me. So that's what brought me to you. And so that's what I decided finally, like, all right, I'm going to go into this program. And that itself was very therapeutic. Just that, you know, that nutritional therapy program was very therapeutic, learning so much about my own body and how I can help other people. So, all of this kind of became my why of what I do and why I'm so passionate. And when my little bio, when it says a passionate wellness educator, that really stems from my first question of what is healthy. What is healthy? Is it vegan? Is it paleo? What is it? And now, like 9 years later, it's just completely bio-individual. It really has to be. Everyone is so different. What works for me doesn't work for you. And that includes mental health. And I think it's important that we have this conversation because I think it's important that people know that there are other things that they can do out there, not just go to the doctor and get a script, right? Like not just, just be positive.
Yeah. Use happiness.
Just be happy.
It's so easy. You can do it.
Smile. It'll go away. It's like, okay.
Melissa, you are so passionate. I mean, I'm sure the listeners can hear it in your voice, but we see Melissa on camera right now. And I mean, she's just full of energy. I'm sure we could talk for like days about this. I love how passionate you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, such an amazing story. I think it's been really educational and empowering. I hope that this makes our audience go out and do more research and ask these questions.
Yeah.
We always like to ask at the end of our podcasts, if you could give our audience just one piece of advice about something that they could start doing today to go down this path that you've gone on, or just, you know, any kind of inspiration or whatever you want to share.
Yeah, ask yourself why. Why do you have a rash? Why do you not feel good? Why do you feel sad when you think about that thing? Or why does that person trigger you? What is it about that thing or that situation that's triggering you? What, just why? Always ask why.
Amazing. So easy.
I love that.
You're amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So if people want to learn more about you or get in touch with you or possibly work with you, how? Tell us everything.
Sure. So you can go to Instagram, Wellness Witch. And I think there's the period Wellness period Witch. And then
the Wellness Witch. I love it.
We'll put that in the show notes so it's easy to.
Yeah. And then my website is actually under construction, but it'll be your Wellness Witch at live. So
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll put all that in there so you guys can check it out.
Absolutely.
We'll share everything.
Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Hopefully, figure out a way to do it again.
Yes, definitely. Awesome. We love you. Thank you.
All right. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Biohacker Babes. We will see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support. Until then, happy biohacking.